We had overall like 8 equity partners, and it were several things. But the key thing was really that I think 2 years ago, we invited the whole company to really define our purpose. Where do we want to be? For what do we want to stand? And what's driving me, as I said in the introduction, is what keeps me not awake at night, but gets me out of the bed in the morning and in front of the desk. And we actually did a whole exercise around that. And it was really clear that what people wanted to do, they want to empower the leading European organizations in their digital transformation to really drive the digital future of Europe.
Welcome to the Leaders in Consulting podcast, the show that delivers cutting-edge insights from other leaders in consulting companies. If you want a summary of learnings from each episode, or you want to meet other consulting leaders at our monthly in-person meetups, head to leadersinconsulting.com and subscribe to our newsletter. Please note, you must be a partner or MD of a consulting company with at least 40 employees to be eligible to join our in-person meetups. Today, I'm very happy that we have Ferdinand Weiss joining us. He's founder and partner of EdX Partners. Ferdinand, welcome to our show.
Welcome, and thank you, Sammy, for inviting me to the show here.
Yeah, pleasure. So tell me about your company, EdX Partners. What are you doing?
So EdX Partners was actually founded in 2012 and is now one of the leading providers for digital services. We have a quite experienced team of around 200 consultants helping our clients with their digital transformation end-to-end.
And what's your job at your company?
So I'm one of the founders and still co-CEO of the company. We have a working partnership. So beside the operational things a CEO does, I'm still involved with our clients actually on a daily basis. That's really what I'm enjoying. I'm really passionate about, I would say, ERP, SAP implementation, even if there's sometimes a little bit odd to say. But the whole digital journey is one of the things which drives me. And for example, yesterday I was speaking in the morning to one of our newer clients, or potentially new client, who is a manufacturer in Germany for electric supplies. And we want to help them in their digital manufacturing. And then in the afternoon, I had a meeting with the CIOs of one of our largest pharma clients in Germany and talked about regulatory programs and digital challenges overall. So that's what my day is about. Actually, in the evening, I then met a potential partner candidate, which we want to hire. So still quite involved.
Okay, very good. Can you, you already said that you have about 200 employees. Any other metric you want to share about the size and growth of your company?
As I said, we founded like 11, 12 years ago. We are around 200 people now and really with deep expertise. I think what is a little bit one of our, let's say, points of uniqueness is that we have a quite experienced team. So we have an average 13 years of experience in our staff, so quite senior.
That is very senior, yes.
And just to give you a little bit the key metrics, last year we had around 55 million euros revenue. Mm-hmm. This year we aim for 65, and we are well on track.
Nice.
And the target actually for the next years, and this is what the story is about, is to reach 150 million in the next 5 years and triple the number of employees and become more than 500. Mm-hmm. And actually to become one of the European leaders for digital transformation overall.
And we'll deep dive into why and how you do that. I mean, that's going to be your story where you brought on private equity. So that's super interesting. And you closed that private equity deal end of last year, correct?
End of last year, basically.
So right now, where's your geographical footprint at this moment?
At the moment, we are mainly focusing on the German-speaking area, so Austria, Switzerland, and Germany. We have already a quite good footprint here, so around 40% of the biggest enterprises of the largest corporations we advise already in their large scale transformation. So that's what we do. But as you said, we want to expand further following the footprint of our clients. So most of our clients actually are based in Switzerland, Germany, Austria, but work globally. So we have already done projects. I actually have been in China, Shanghai, in South America, and the Americas overall. But the focus of the next step is Europe, and we want to expand in Europe, becoming a European leader.
And that's a nice learning already there, because I know some consulting companies that are smaller and wanted to expand into different, like totally different geographies. In my opinion, way too early. And you grew to 200 employees, 50 million revenue in the DACH market. I mean, of course, you go with your client. That's normal as a consultancy, but you didn't say, well, I have to have a footprint in, I don't know, USA, because that's cool. Yeah. And then you spread yourself too thin and it's not growing anymore. So you're a really good testament that stick to your guns, to your target market, to the geographies. And then you even said it's not something we can do or want to do by ourselves, but we take some additional money and then we are able to grow by, and we go into that a little bit later, but not only by yourself, but buying someone who has a footprint there.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's always quite, as you said, tempting to open an office in New York, Shanghai or something like that. But then you spend most of the time in the plane, and there's enough to do in Europe, and the challenges here are big enough and the market is still big enough. Yeah. But that's basically the next step we are talking about, and why we actually decided to also, was one of the reasons to bring an investor with us on board.
Funny enough, even my very, compared to you, small company, we have 15 employees now. Already, like, we have a client in New Jersey, New York now. But that was like organically. Yeah.
Yeah.
By referrals. And then you're shortly tempted to say, well, we already have one client. How about we go hunting there? And then I said, no, Sammy, you should stick to your guns, stay here and grow here until you're big enough to really build a team or buy something there.
Yeah.
So let's go a little bit into the history of your company before we go into the present and the whole really interesting story about growing with private equity and how you did that. Why did you co-found Addex and did you do that out of a safe job or why did you do it? Out of what situation as well?
I actually had I need to think 12 years of experience in the consulting industry. I was had a safe job, as you said, at Accenture, and actually I really enjoyed it. I need to say I'm still have high regards of my time and Accenture as a company. I've learned a lot there, and we come to that later. But Frank Riemensperger, the former CEO of the DACH region of Accenture, is in our advisory board, so we use the connections from there. But honestly, at that time, it felt a little bit, and not saying that I was dissatisfied with my career, but I was up for more. I wanted to be, rather than being a small part in a bigger organization, I wanted to be more independent and actually have more skin in the game. This was what was really driving me. And I remember, and you know, this doesn't come overnight. You wake up and say, now I need to go independent and form my own company. This was a process over months, not even saying years. But one of the initial sparks was a discussion with a client. At that time, I was doing a big supply chain transformation for Bombardier at that time, and had my one-on-one with the CIO, which I today still know quite well. And he was saying that he rather needed an independent advisor than somebody from Accenture in that position. It was one of the huge programs implementing SAP reorganization of the whole supply chain globally. And I was leading that program for Bombardier on their behalf, but he needed an independent guy there. Yeah, because, you know, it's like when things come too close or too sharp, you always have your own company. And that was one of the things where I think, okay, this is something unique where you can position. And this is exactly how we position ourselves at Addex. Addex stands for Advisory Excellence. So trying to be really the trusted advisor. And then things come together. Carsten Krach, the other co-founder, he also left Accenture, and we were sitting together, actually not with a beer, with a pizza, and decided to build the company like 12 years ago.
Awesome. How did you discuss this with your family?
Not that much, because actually it was really an easy decision for me. First of all, I need to say that I don't come from an entrepreneurial family or something like that, but I had my own company while studying already. So did know how it felt. And there were like two options: become a partner in one of the major consulting firms or do something on my own. And it was like the moment, if you don't do it now, you're never going to do it. You know, people always say, oh, that was very brave and a lot of risk. Actually, I don't think so, because I always knew if I fail, I always had the chance to go back. Actually, I did receive the call. Frank Riemensperger was already CEO by then. I'm quite sure he called me like a couple of days before I left and said, Ferdinand, all the best, and you know what you're doing. But if you want... And that's what I knew. So I said, okay, I'll try it for a year. And we were very lucky. We started with a big pharma project right from the beginning. And as from there it goes, basically. Yeah.
Very good. And it's also a testament to the culture at that point, at least at Accenture, that they were friendly to the people leaving, because I saw it also differently. I mean, honestly, yeah. I saw partners leaving consultancies and they were forced to bring back their cars on a Saturday or Sunday just to like squeeze something in there. Yeah. And I thought that's so short-sighted, because in the end, those people will have great positions in some other companies. You can cooperate, they could go into the industry, then they're potential clients. Why are you doing that?
People tend to come back even if they do their own things. We actually have a very good or very low attrition rate at Adex, which is a very good sign. But if people leave us, sometimes they do their own things, want to do their own companies. And it's always me saying, how could I actually tell you not to do it while I have done it the same on my own? So,
yes.
And if you want people with an entrepreneurial mindset, that's the consequence, that some of them go even further and do their own thing. No, that's
absolutely
absolutely clear. Yeah.
So you grew the company like quite large in the 10, 12 years that you had from your beginning. What were your main success factors in hindsight that helped you grow so big without outside money, I assume?
Yeah, absolutely. We did grow on our own until now, basically, and financed on our own. Come to that later a little bit, but basically, as I just said a sentence before, we were quite lucky that when I left, we all had our connections. I had like 12 years. Carsten had more than 20 years of experience. I was well connected in the farm industry. He was more the industrial equipment guy, automotive industry guy. And we talked to our clients. And as I said, I basically took along or started with a big pharma project. Not that I really take something away, but they called me and said, it's excellent that you're now out, because we need somebody to be on our side to advise a larger ERP implementation they wanted to do with Accenture at that time. So that was a starting point. And then we leveraged the knowledge basically from this pharma client to other industries, for sure, directly to what Carsten was doing, automotive, and industrial equipment, but now also financial services. We're quite well connected into retail as well, as our headquarters in Hamburg. And there's a big retailer in Hamburg, as you probably know, who also did a quite successful digital transformation. We have been involved there quite significantly. So the counterpart of Zalando, I would say, in that area. But one of the key success factors is really having deep expertise and I would say the best people. As I said in the beginning, we have an average of 13 years of experience. So we don't have only young guys who try to advise. And also what we did very, very early. And for example, Stefan Rieder, my co-CEO, he turned also very early as a partner. So we supported all this entrepreneurial mindset from the very beginning to attract the people and give them a right platform to really do not their own business, but grow and have their own individual careers with us. To remain this, we call it in German Mitmach culture. Yeah. So people can build the company and still building the company. So even when we did hold this investor discussion, this was a quite open process for us. For sure, you need to have some confidentiality in certain aspects. You cannot disclose everything, but especially in our wider partnerships, and not only the equity partners, they were quite involved from the very beginning, and we were quite open there, and they could also drive the whole process to a certain extent.
So what I learned already from your high level summary is that you started your own consulting company after really a long time being a consultant, having a substantial network, and then you stuck to your existing network to leverage that for your first projects. You get some money, you can hire the first people, and you basically stick to the area of expertise that you had. So you didn't grow widely, you stuck to pharma, and then you slowly expanded to other industries, for example.
Yeah.
So, and one thing you mentioned, you have equity partners as well. So you were not, I wouldn't say greedy. I would say you were smart in a way that you say, I'm happy to share a part or stake in the company. Why did you do that?
Actually, because this was one of the reasons I left Accenture. Yeah. And even now, and we'll come to why we did the deal now and how we did the deal is, you always need to think, and that sounds odd to think about the next generation, but I was lucky. Actually, Carsten is 10 years older than myself. So we thought, okay, if we build a company, and it was very clear from the very beginning, we don't want to do something like being a couple of freelancers. We wanted to build a company. We wanted to build a player. You only can do that if you have the right people on board. And I would have only gone to a company where I have stakes, where I have skin in the game, where I can be my own entrepreneur, where I can mitmach and do things. And this is what we're supporting. And then you attract the right people and on both sides, basically. That was, I think, in the first year, we almost did $1 million revenue in the first year. And then starting from the second year, people actually, I remember, I think it was in the second year or something, third year, something like that. One of our who wanted to come to us, he actually booked a slot with me. I want to do an interview there with you. It's like he approached me proactively. And yeah, I'm not saying that things then go on its own. It is hard work. I actually always read the funny stories of the startups which grow to unicorn easily. It is always hard work, but if you combine these factors and really what also is quite important is deep industry expertise these days. So not only consulting buzzwords, not only digital buzzwords, you need to have IT skills, I would say, the right business sense. And if you combine these things together, the growth comes along almost naturally, I would say, if you keep things in track and mind, keep an eye on the KPIs.
Yeah, and you focus on the right pillars. And I think, I mean, you never know what would happen or what would have happened if you wouldn't have done that with the equity stakes that you also gave away to partners. But in the end, you made a couple of decisions that were key and they were the right decisions. And of course, nothing grows linearly to the right top. Yeah, it's usually, at least in my experience, like more of a wave going upwards when you make a line through the wave. But
what was actually different for us, if I may interrupt here, if you look at our growth, really looks like that. There's a small dip in the Corona year. Mm-hmm. But actually only because we didn't charge expenses anymore. So if you look only at the true consulting revenue, it is almost like a not a straight line for sure, but a very, very clear path. And actually what we did also from the very beginning, we always had a clear plan. It felt a little bit odd in the beginning if you like couple of guys, like 15 people, and you start planning the next 3 years, because you say, hey, reality always shows different. But if you have a plan and you try to stick to it, people then focus on the right things, get things done. And again, it's attracting right people. Yeah, if we would not have this chance to actually be part of an equity partnership, I'm quite sure that we would not have the people on board, because some of them really came to us that was a decision either to do something on our own or to join us as a platform, as I said.
Yeah, and I honestly must say that was one of the main reasons why I didn't stay in the business as a consultant. I started at one company, and I didn't see the same structure and the same goal of making basically entrepreneurs within the company that have the chance to get a stake in the company. So I thought, I want to be an entrepreneur. So for me, it was clear I leave consulting because I thought that's normal. And now I know, well, it was probably the wrong company for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice to see that these companies exist. And you will say it later anyway, but you still have the same mindset and look for people that have this growth mindset.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then that was also one of the trigger points, because, and I said it before, yeah, we are now 200 people almost, and then like over 50 million revenues. You need to have a model, a structure that supports that going forward, that people are able to invest and do not have to put significant money on the table to get a certain stake in the company. That was one of the trigger points besides others. Yeah.
So that's leading to the perfect next question. When and why did you start thinking about taking growth capital on board?
So as I said before, and this was not only Carsten and myself anymore, we at that time were a real equity partnership. We had overall like 8 equity partners, and it were several things. But the key thing was really that I think 2 years ago, we invited the whole company to really define our purpose. Where do we want to be? For what do we want to stand? And what's driving me, as I said in the introduction, is what keeps me not awake at night, but gets me out of the bed in the morning and in front of the desk. And we actually did a whole exercise around that. And it was really clear that what people wanted to do, they want to empower the leading European organizations in their digital transformation to really drive the digital future of Europe. And at that time, we were already a hidden champion in our industry, and we are still one of the hidden champions. But we wanted to become more. We wanted to become more European, and we only not hidden, but we want to become a leader in that area, really well known, but still remain and this trusted advisor. Yeah, not being the normal consultant, but really the one you call when you say, a big transformation, large scale transformation ahead of us. I call Adex and talk to Ferdinand or Carsten or Stefan or the others to help me on that way. And I'm not quite sure if I mentioned in our first talks, but I grew up in Brussels. So I rather feel European than German, even if that's sometimes odd to say. And I think, and you know, there are a lot of US-based, but in the meantime, also Chinese players in the area. And there's a market that they quite need for a European player.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so to sum it up, your goal basically is go from hidden champion in Germany to European player like Champions League, so to say.
Exactly.
So what options did you explore around capital that you wanted to take on to grow faster?
So and as I said, this was the kind of the trigger point beside others. We come to that, but then we were sitting together. Okay, at that time, as I said, we were a real equity partnership. So 50 million revenue financed by 8 equity partners. You can do the math. Yeah. And we know that if we want to grow beyond, let's say, 100 million, and potentially also want to grow inorganically, the structure will not fit anymore. And that was basically where we said, okay, we need external capital to boost our purpose and further grow. For sure, we talked, and actually even in Corona, we talked to banks and no problem to get money. But there were a few trigger points. So first of all, as I said already, we wanted to have the option for the next generation also to take over without investing major sums into it. And there was a quite diverse risk appetite, if I say so. And these things together actually led to, let's combine and look what the different options are. And we looked basically everywhere at the beginning and I think it took me a year to talk to different companies, informed myself, talked to friends who have done it before. One of them recently just sold his company. And then we started to process. And it was quite clear from the very beginning that we want to go in a direction of private equity.
Did you also have some offer of a bank that you at least considered?
Not from a bank, but as always, there were others, especially strategic investors. And that was also one of the things where we were very clear. And I think this was also one of the key points for this whole process, to bring the equity partnership together and say, what do we really want? Do we simply want to sell the company? Do we want to finance it via bank? Or do we want to bring an investor on board and continue your story? And we did actually write that down, what we wanted to do, really put it in written and also informed the other partners about. Yeah, because as you know, there are people around who simply buy companies, or you go to one of the larger networks or something like that. We looked at these options. I think it's important to know what your options are, but it was very clear what we wanted to know.
And now about you personally. So what was your very personal reason, or the reasons besides you want to grow a champion, to take on outside capital and maybe also like take a little bit off the table that you had in the company?
And you said these two things for sure played a role, but the key thing is really to grow further. And I did set myself into the shoes of others, and I had quite a lot of discussions with our partners who didn't have equity at the time. And one of them said, it feels like glass decade, we say in Germany, so he cannot reach further, the glass ceiling exactly. And I know if we're not going to do things there, we're going to stop. And I think consulting in that area, I'm not saying that you're obliged to grow, but if you don't grow, it always feels that you fall back. Even if I'm still eager to continue for quite a while, I know that I'm not going to do that for the next 10 to 15 years. So there needs to be somebody taking over and leading the business going forward. And then you need to bring the structures. And again, as I said, I'm a European. As I said, we didn't fall the trap to open an office in Shanghai or New York. But we are in discussions with our clients saying, okay, do you have a client who is based in the Nordics? Having a subsidiary there would definitely help. And I know that as we did in the beginning, you can't do that on your own. If you think you keep it all for yourself and it's not going to work. I always thought it's better to have a small piece of a larger cake than have the small cake on your own. Yeah,
absolutely. And what you're saying reminds me of a book I read about Brazilian, I forgot the name, to be honest, the three guys in Brazil that are super successful investment bankers and entrepreneurs who bought Coca-Cola, for example, or a big stake in Coca-Cola. And the European brewery. Anheuser-Busch.
Busch, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's what they bought. And one of the reasons, one of the guys said, is basically where we have talent, if we don't grow and don't offer options, they're going to leave and then we're all going to stall. So it's not you have to grow for the sake of growing. You have to grow to keep the right people in the company so that you're able to have what you have right now.
Exactly. Keep people options for grow and individual careers and expand themselves. And if, as I said, if you don't give them something, they will find better places
Yeah. So that even made it into the pillars of our culture in my company. And it helps people who are non-entrepreneurs understand why we have growth goals. So it's not for the sake of making the entrepreneur more, more money and get those people like be more like even more rich than you are already if you're rich. But it's about offering opportunities. And if you don't offer these opportunities, well, there's this glass ceiling and people will leave if they're good ones.
Exactly. And as I said at the beginning, in these days, you get these offers. You know, get these offers to sell the company being taken over. And we know that sometimes these are the most lucrative options. Yeah? And if it was only about making the most money for the 8 of us or for Carsten and myself or whoever, then we would have chosen another option. For sure, we and this was one of the triggers as well. Actually, all of the 8 are still significantly invested and wanted to still being operational. So we hope to actually like doing even more about it. But that was one of the trigger points. It's really like now setting the structure for the next 10 years and come to it later. But now I think we have over 40 of our employees invested in the company.
Ah, that's very good.
So it's a major stake.
Going from 8 to over 40, that's like a good increase. Well done, fivefold. Yeah. That's cool. And that probably also, I don't know, did you feel a difference in the drive, or did you feel like something changed in the company because of that?
Yes, definitely. But not only because, and to be honest, this whole investor thing was almost a side story. The whole process, and we come to it later, what we actually did, but the whole process sharpened our mind. It became very clear what we wanted to do, and we all did focus on a common goal, and that really boosted the eager in the company. So people were eager to explore more, take more responsibility, understand why we want to now focus on target clients and all this. And so it felt a little bit like an acceleration overall. Not only when it comes to revenue and growth, but like setting the right structures, making responsibilities, decision criteria clear, and all these things.
And one thing, and that's more a personality trait of you and probably your co-founder, is that you're not suffering from the hero complex, which is that some company owners, also in the consulting industry, have the need to feel needed. So to say, and they have to be the rainmakers making, bringing in the big projects, or being the ones making the final touch on the presentation or whatever they do so that they think or feel needed. And that's suppressed. And they are also either consciously or subconsciously suppressing the growth of others, because if they get too good and too successful, right, they are challenging the king or the queen, so to say. And that's what I really saw in companies that are not that small. So companies over 100, 200 employees, I saw this problem. And that's basically putting a ceiling on the company. And you don't have that. And you're so honest to say, well, I'm not going to be the one, and you would be young enough to lead the company for the next 10 years or 15.
Absolutely.
That's really good.
I could also have other hobbies. I still enjoy what I'm doing. But for me, it felt if there's somebody else who could do it better, go for it. Yeah. I'm absolutely happy to step back into the second line. As I said, I still enjoy working with clients. So if somebody would say, I'm the better CEO, and as I said, I have Stefan Rieder already on my side. And we consciously said we want to have two guys there. There needs to be a next generation, and for sure not like in Germany we say on the Stuhl kleben, yeah. So to stick to your power. As I said, I enjoy doing projects. So if I can lead again a big digital transformation for one of our pharma clients, I'm here.
Yeah, and I mean, just because you're not CEO anymore doesn't mean you have nothing to do with your company. There's still like a board role or whatever you can have. I think that fosters a really good culture in the company, so that they see you're willing to bring the right people up, and it's all for the good of the company.
Yeah.
So that's nice. So now we're at the point you decided that you want to bring on growth, equity, and money, so to say. And what was the next logical step that you took?
Actually, as I said, we did put in written what we wanted to aim for and what the key criteria are.
One question, follow-up question there. So you put it in writing to get the buy-in from whom? Was it only the, or was it the equity partners? Was it a broader set of people?
It was actually, writing was equity partners and we communicated it to the rest. The writing in equity partners was, I think, quite substantial. As I said, all of them are not only different age, different background, different personal situation. So I wanted to make sure that not in the process of somebody saying, oh, I think something different. I want to stay independent. I want more. I want less, whatever. So we had a clear decision criteria in there. We said, okay, if we go, these are the options. These are the pitfalls. These are the things, how are we going to decide in the future? And I think that it was clear because, again, it focused. And then there were tough discussions, yeah, because some people did need to let go a little bit and give up some freedom, give up some shares. For sure, others did get a little bit more. And so this is a tense discussion. Actually, we were quite lucky, and that was also one of the key points. We did choose a very professional, good investment bank. It was recommended by a professional friend. And we were lucky to find someone who really knows our industry, but is well connected enough. So this is something I would really recommend is choose the team, the partners you do this process with very wisely. We looked at quite a lot. As I said, I think we did choose the right partner, and we hope that they still also support us now in our further M&A activities. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I deep dive, or we will deep dive into that in a second. But going back, because that's a crucial part of the whole process, it seems, because if you do that one wrong, the first part of getting the buy-in from the equity partners, everything can fall apart later on. And consultants are really good in helping other companies do exactly that. You have to work on the people side to get a project rolling, but they more often than not forget their own employees when they want to do some changes. Did you have the idea to do that by yourself, or did someone advise you to do that? And what did you exactly put down in writing in the end? So what was the result of these whole discussions?
So the result there was like, what are the options? How do we decide on the options? We actually also said the time frame we did set up. So we said we want to do that in the next 2 years. Otherwise, we restart or rethink. We for sure did put in like the key criteria saying, okay, we all want to remain operational for at least the next 5 years. We all wanted to invest significantly. We did for sure talk about shares and who's going to get what. We also did put in writing that we want to have the opportunity to extend the partnership or the equity partnership to a larger scale of our employees. All these things we put together. This was a quite intense discussion because there were different opinions. That was actually also somebody, we asked for a senior advisor, was at that time already Frank Greensberger, to help us a little bit. What is the growth story and things like that? To get the groups, get the ranks together to a certain extent, you know, because there will be some tricky questions and people will try to find out if you're clear on the mindset, this is where we want to go, that helps the process. It's one of the key success factors. And having the right partners, as I said, having the right investment bank was not always easy, I need to admit. We had fun, but was one of the key criteria for success.
How did you choose your investment bank that supported you through this process?
As I said, they were recommended by a friend, but we looked at others. As I said, knowing the industry, having the right skills, having also the manpower, you don't want to have a junior team who only has like two or three people. At the end, it's a lot about personal relationship. And it's do you trust these guys doing the right thing for you, drive the process in the right direction? That's the key thing.
So and how like usually you assume you don't work with investment bankers, so it's a different breed. I remember because I was deciding before joining the consulting business to either go into investment banking or consulting, and I personally didn't have like a really good vibe with the investment bankers. It was a totally different breed of people.
Yeah,
it's not bad or good. It's just different than I expected to work. So how was it for you working with these investment bankers, and what was maybe you're also your feeling after the first 1 to 3 meetings?
So first of all, and you probably know the movie Wall Street with Michael Douglas as Gordon Gekko, the guy with the hair, and you, that's at least how one of them looked like. So it was really funny. It felt a little bit like in the 80s, not in the 80s from a bad sense, but like, but they were great sparring partners. They actually really challenged us and prepared us for the questions and the whole process. They also challenged, they put the finger in the wounds where we were not quite clear on our strategy, operating model. And this is something we then adjusted together. And as I said, I think without them, it would not have been that successful. It felt like a real good coach. And you know, if you have a good soccer play, you leave the field and say, well, today I really did well with your team, and everybody's eager. And then you have this coach on the side who says, good job, but 1, 2, 3. And this is how it felt with them. And you need to like that. Sometimes it's personally, and you know, having formed a company over the last 10 years, being quite successful, it's hard if somebody says, hey, not good. You could do better, but at the end, it really brings you further and helps you to further growth. And we are still in contact. I'm not talking to them on a regular basis, but just connected friends with them as well. And I really can only recommend. It was a good exercise. And Sammy, I need to admit, I had the same impression. I'm not a financial services guy. I'm not a banking guy. So it felt a little bit, oh, what do they want to do with us?
Yeah, but it pays into the whole notion that I get from you, that you're humble enough to accept that other people may know better. And even though they're different, you still take the good things out and say, okay, they really say something that is true. That's why it's probably hurting so much. Because it probably hurts when you build something and the revenues are rising and you think, wow, that's awesome. And look at the balance sheet and the earnings. I mean, what do you want? And he says, no. This, that's not
there's
good.
There's more behind it. There's more behind it. Basically, they invest in future. So you need to be very clear about your future. They for sure want to see the track record and see it clearly. But it's exactly as you said, and this is what we do with our clients as well. Yeah, we advise our clients, okay, you have a transformation, you have something in front of you, what you haven't done before. Get some help, get somebody. Like if you climb a mountain and have a track in front of you, which you don't know, and it's a little bit more dangerous than the rest, you get somebody to help you. And if you then have people almost like somebody, okay, they can also carry some weight, and that is also some quite important. This is intensive work. We did due diligence with 4 parties at the same time. You're not going to manage that on your own. We have thousands of questions we needed to answer and document properly. And they have done it before, and that was simply great. And for sure. And you know, consulting is not a place with 9-to-5 jobs, but there were some significant workloads over that time, some weekend and long evenings.
Yeah, I definitely can relate to that. That's because you still have to, you have a business, and that shouldn't falter and shouldn't get worse, because if the numbers go down, the whole process is falling apart. So you have to keep on pushing the business and on top do this whole process with your team. So that seems to be
basically have 2 jobs at the same time to a large extent at the time. And that is something you also, it was, and that was actually, we had like a team of 4 of the equity partners involved in there. And I know that Stefan, for example, he had a agreement with his partners saying, okay, at that time, there's no private life, at least for the next 2 months. Please bear with me in that time. It's going to get better afterwards. And I basically did the same at home. It's like having clear that this is a certain and a special time you need to focus on.
Yeah, that's a very good advice that usually you don't hear that much, but you also have like another boss at home or a partner, basically, and a family, and they should bear with you, because if you have problems there during this whole process, that's going to be really hard. So that's good advice as well, to take your family and your wife or husband with you through this whole process.
Yeah.
What is the key advice you would give someone who doesn't have a direct relation to an investment banker or gets a clear point to this is the best one, you should choose this one? What are the main 1, 2, or 3 criteria? You also already mentioned, well, the company should be big enough. They should have subject matter expertise, so in consulting, maybe even in the area of consulting that you are doing. But besides that, was it more gut feeling that you said, this is probably the right one, or were there hard criteria as well?
I think you mentioned the key criteria, and there are a few players on the market there, basically, and we'll come to that later, but I can already now pick up the phone. We can talk. It's probably too much to go into details there, but it's having, what do you really want? What is the outcome? And then choose from there. There are different options. There are more the smaller firms, more personal relationship. But key is really, they have the manpower and they have the expertise. They know the market. They know our industry, and have the good connections, because that really played out well. They had the tools and the processes in place. They took us at hand and drove us through the processes.
Yeah. Perfect. That's what you want to hear.
Yeah.
And we didn't talk about the timeline yet, but what was the exact point of time when you decided now we want to start to, well, at the end of last year, basically close the process? But can you quickly tell us these 2 dates?
I think you remember when we said we did put all this in written when we really then started the process, because that was, for me personally, I knew that this is going to be hard and additional work. I said I'm only going to do that when we have signed this and all agree and have more than only a mutual agreement. We had a written agreement. I think we did that in May. We signed in, I think it was beginning of November, and closed the deal end of this year. So it was basically half a year, the crucial period, something
that's
like
fast.
That.
So May 22, you had the written confirmation. Now we're going to start.
Yeah.
And September, around half a year later.
November it was then.
November it was, a half a year later, 22, you basically closed the deal.
Yeah.
Very good. Who else did you already mentioned that you had someone else supporting you on the strategic level? Who and why, and what did this person bring to the table?
As I said, I talked to various of people to understand how these processes work, what they have done. We were lucky that, as I said before, and he's now even our board, that Frank Riemsberger, former CEO of Accenture, helped us there in this period. Also, I think he did 2 things, is to really clarify and make our growth story crisp and clear. But also he helped us to focus on the longer term target. Yeah, this is in this time. And as I said, we were 8 people, different situations. You need to be very cautious that you do not just get the most compelling deal, which provides the most money or whatever the deal is, but really look at the long term. What is the right partner to grow further? And select with this criteria rather than jump too quick. And there he helped us. And yeah, I actually talked to a lot of people, even in the process, even quite openly to the investors, to hear their views and things. And then you get to learn.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And so what were the key milestones? How did the whole process from you selected the investment bank to now it closed look like?
So when we selected them, and then it runs almost like, not automatically, but when you step on the train, it starts rolling and getting faster. So the first thing is basically you do a quick investment brief. So you put all the things together, the story, the key KPIs, the growth ambition. And this is, we did send out to quite a range of investors. So we did it rather broad from the very beginning. So they brought along, we looked internationally, as we said, we looked different. So it was quite a lot. And then from there, we didn't disclose our name by then, and we asked them to sign an NDA and certain criteria, certain things. And if they signed it, and quite a lot signed it. So we attracted the right interest on the market from the very beginning.
Now at this stage, okay, what happens next?
Next happens is that you talk to these people. You have, they call it coffee table talks. It was new to me as well. You provide them a little bit more information about the company. Historically, data, as I said in the beginning, we had a quite good track record. And then you ask them to give an indicative offer. And that, as I said, the whole process was well managed, and it goes quite well. Also because, as you mentioned before, you still have a normal business to do. So you do basically the day with your clients, and at night you start working on that, answering questions, getting the figures together. I need to admit, two things we did also quite well. We did bring our HR head into the process quite early, as well as our CFO. So they did the indicative offer. And then we choose basically and we shortened down to a list where we wanted to do the due diligence with.
How many was that then?
We choose four to go to the due diligence.
And so how did you select the winner, and who is the winner in the end?
So the winner is Capvis. It's widely known, so I can disclose that. Actually, this was quite easy for us. Because at the end, it was the offers were similar. There were some notions differently, and for sure the price tag was not completely similar, but in the same range. Actually, we did really choose, and we choose that with one voice. So all of the eight were clear on that this is the one, because it really felt they are the right partner for us. They had the right team. They understand our business. They had the same ambitions as us. Same strategic goals. They have people who actually, there was one former colleague from Accenture, a guy from, I think, McKinsey. So they knew the industry. And it felt at the end, like in Germany, we say Liebeshochzeit. Yeah. So you had like four in front of them, and then you choose what you think. And sounds like a little bit odd being a trusted advisor. We found our trusted investor.
Well, that's,
I think,
good.
They used that sentence. Nobody knows where it comes from, but it really felt we trust them. And I can say now we are in 6 months in this relationship, and the whole, let's say, atmosphere is still very good and very constructive. Yeah, it's feeling good. And this is how we did choose on. Yeah, it was, the facts and figures were right for all of them. And then you basically back to, what is your gut feeling? What does your heart tell you? Who's the right partner? Who do you want to work with? And that's also something I talk to my clients and I recommend to our clients is if you have the feeling to work with us as a consultant for the next 3 years, then you should do it. If you think there's somebody else better for you, go for it.
Yeah. That's good. But it's definitely something when you're on the other side, and not being the one consulting, feeling it from the other side and then acting on it is probably different. Yeah.
And we have been in that situation. That's not only easy. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Can you tell us something about disclose whatever you can disclose about valuation or the amount invested or the multiple that was chosen, at least in which area it was?
Big question about the multiple that drives the whole industry, I almost said. As I said, we agreed confidentiality here, so I cannot disclose too much. But what I can say is that Capvis normally invests only in like three-digit million amounts. And that's what they have done.
So next question, it's more personal. So what was for you personally the most stressful part of the whole process?
I would say it was two things. And you mentioned it before, you know, you have four people or four parties you create relationship with. And I have been on the side, not being selected as the consulting partner, to pick up the phone and tell the guys, and I did that personally, you not have been chosen. And that was not nice. Yeah, because at least I would say for two or three of them, I would actually could have, if the others would have saying we would have chosen that one, I would potentially would have only also go along at least with one of them. So that was not easy. That's not my type to say no.
Yeah.
The most stressful from a working perspective was basically the due diligence. Mm. As I said, yeah. And there were people recommending do that exclusively for one, because you're not going to manage that. It's going to harm your business. Doing that with four at the same time, we were well structured, well prepared. But that was really stressful because you do your day-to-day job, then you, and it really was like you go back into the tool. You remember having answered like 20, 30 questions the evening before. You open the inbox and there again, 40 questions. And it was not tricky questions, it was actually quite good in the whole process. I think that was also something which did drive our evaluation. Normally you have in these due diligence, you always have red flags, things you haven't thought of. And actually they called our clients, they called our former employees. And one of the investors said there was no red flag. You remember saying, okay, they were in talks with their lawyers and they opened the talk. So let's talk about the problem and what are the things we need to address. And there was silence. They said, we haven't found nothing. And that was actually good, but again, well prepared. And we did clear, we had our numbers right. If there were things, we were able to explain them properly. Like, for example, why was the dip in the Corona time, as I said before, simply because we didn't build expenses anymore. We were all sitting at home the whole time. And these were the things you need to prepare. But that was stressful, you know. And it feels odd, like you said before, you're kind of successful, have been growing a company for the last 10 years, and then you have somebody turning around every stone. But it felt also good because, you know, it clears the mind and say, this is what I want, this is what we want to go for, this is our growth story. So it was good for the company as well.
Funny enough, what you just said reminds me of sports coaching. So I have a sports coach, and what she told me once, and it always stuck with me, is train hard, race easy. And what you basically had with your investment banker is a hard training, going through all the hoops, cleaning up everything that you had to do anyway. And then it's not easy anymore. Like, it's still hard, but you don't have red flags anymore because you did all the homework. So that's good.
You need to have your story right. You need to have that. And as I said, we were a team of eight and even a wider partnership. And they also involved other people into the process. So they invited non-equity partners. And basically everybody was to the spot, can tell the story. This is what we want. This is what we aim for. And that was really good. Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't only want to ask about the hard stuff. So what was the nicest or best moment in the whole process for you personally?
Actually signing the deal. I really remember that you said in the beginning, sometimes they're close to tears. There, I was really close to tears. We signed the deal at a notary in Munich, I think at 2 o'clock at night. And, you know, going through this immense time of work, and then it was a team like 20 to 30 people working the whole day through the legal things. We had our lawyers, their lawyers. And, you know, I this is what I really like, when a team works smoothly hand in hand. It was, and at that time, I need to admit, my part was then to sign. Yeah, there were the lawyers. It was everything clear. A few questions came up, no red flags. Then signing the deals at 2 o'clock at night was really moving, I need to admit. Especially knowing that I had to catch a train at 6 a.m. to go to one of our clients.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So a short night at that, but I think I need to check, but I think it was a Wednesday or Thursday or something like that. So it's, I knew I just had to survive until the weekend. Yeah.
Well, but it gives you energy, I assume, if you sign this deal.
Absolutely. I didn't sleep that much and that was okay. Yeah, but it was really, and at that time, because it was in Munich, it was Stefan and myself. So there's actually a picture when we go down the stairs and it's like, done it.
Yeah, you have to, if you probably already framed it and put it somewhere, because that's something you can show your kids and grandkids. Yeah. That's what I did at some point in my life. Yeah.
Yeah.
You just recently went through the whole process. What advice would you give other owners or managing directors of consulting companies that want to go the same path? So what are the 2, 3, 4 main points that they should really take care of to make it the whole process a success?
Yeah. So first of all, do your backyard cleaning first. So get your story right. Know your ambitions, know your growth stories, as we did with Frank. Then choose the right partner, either an investment bank or the right advisor to do M&A. And last but not least, what we did is keep the process competitive. Not to get the best deal, but just keep it open. Be open-minded about the different options. Yeah. And you know, we were lucky, big enough that we are interesting for an investor. But there are other options also for smaller companies. And this is something you should really look at.
Yeah. So now you have the money in the bank. Yeah. And you did the sole process not for the sake of having money in the bank, but you want to put it to good use. So what targets are you looking for? Or what do you want to do with your money? And in which areas or also geographical areas do you want to invest?
And this was something we also clarified from the very beginning. So we had our own growth story, which was significant. So if we could just keep our track record, it's already attractive. But as I said, we want to grow also inorganically. We're actually looking in different areas. First of all, it is around what we do. I'm not saying IT consulting, but management consulting, IT strategy, I would call it. So this is what we're looking for. We are looking for smaller targets at the moment, because I think it's quite hard if you merge two big companies, but not saying that this would not be an option. So companies between 20 or 50 employees, something like Ryan, with the right fit. For sure, also smaller teams. If there's something, especially in some areas such as data analytics, cloud architecture is one of the drivers. So if you look at the whole chain of a digital transformation, also something more in the beginning, like more the strategic, more business process model discussions where we need more team, the right talents. As I said, we are at the moment quite heavily in DACH, so Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. We are now looking in Nordics was one area I mentioned, the Benelux, but also Spain, Portugal, potentially also leveraging a little bit like capabilities in other areas where with lower costs. So this is what we're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So here, anyone, because we have partners and managing directors also of smaller companies, we have partners who maybe have a small team and who think, ooh, I want to be more entrepreneurial, then listen up and just get in touch with Ferdinand,
And join us as a platform. We didn't sell the company. We have a growth investor. If you want to join us as a platform and say, okay, I have something which I can bring along and yes, be more an integrated part of a group there and leverage from there, because we have connections to the clients. We're still looking for the brightest talents. Yeah. And I'm still talking, as I said, yesterday I had an interview with a former partner of another consulting company. So we still do this team hire. But for sure now, and this was the good thing, one of the reasons, we have also the financial firepower to acquire, if you want to say so.
Yeah, that's the whole fun part now. It's still work, but I assume at least it's fun.
Yeah.
So You mentioned it before that you don't have a formal earnout, which I think it's quite interesting, because when I hear about someone selling his business, especially professional service firms, where the new co-owner wants to make sure that the drivers of the business stay in the company for a couple of years and don't leave after like 2 days and say, thanks for the money and now I'm gone. So how did you make sure that where the one thing is people sign and say, yeah, I want to do it, but the other one is, what do they do afterwards? How did you make sure that your team stays on board, and how did you build that trust with the new investor?
So basically, as I said, the equities partners all significantly invested. So they have a mutual interest that the company grows and the story goes beyond and significantly. So this was one of the triggers. But beyond that, as I said, we now have additional people also investing in there. And this is actually a program which isn't disclosed now. So this is open still. So people who, for example, get promoted to partner get the opportunity to invest or further invest, so extend their investment. So these were the triggers. And I think this is more compelling than just having because we all have seen that. Yeah, you have these earnout clauses. You need to stay for the next 2 years to basically earn the deal. And what happens, and we see that a lot, people after 2.5 years then leave. It's a lot about building the next generation. And when you say you build the next generation, you just don't talk about the next 3 years earnout. You talk about the next 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, very good. So if you want and can disclose, how much of your share did you basically keep, or how much did you basically also sell?
They have a kind of a responsibility against their investors. So this is the first thing I can disclose. Still, we have significant invest, and then we have a so-called managed equity program. And this is investing with a multiple. This is a sweet equity, as it's called. So there's a bigger multiple for them when the deal hits a certain target. So when we basically reach our targets, our growth ambitions, the multiple on that money, which will be much bigger than on the average share. So therefore, you can't really compare how much shares you have, because all of us also have some parts in the management equity program, which is quite interesting, especially if you want to get new partners on board. And this was one of the discussions yesterday. Yeah, these are normally people in the midst of their life. They just build a family, build a house.
But you could take some money off, or you de-risk your own investment, so you don't have 100% in your own company anymore. Exactly. But you can.
To be straight and honest and clear, that was also one of the reasons we built up the company. We had 50 million of revenues. You could imagine what amount of share, especially Carsten, myself, but also others like Stefan and the others had in there. And it is a little bit of risk profile. And things can happen. I'm not saying that there's a big risk in our business.
Well, that's normal. You never put all the eggs in one basket. That's normal. So, did you treat yourself with a trophy after signing the deal and after the money hit your own bank account, which must be, I don't know, feel awkward and cool at the same time, maybe?
It was really, and it was like end of the year where you see and you know, this money comes in and then you must reinvest to a certain extent and things like that. But it feels cool. Actually, I didn't really have the time. One thing I did personally, but that was something I did along for a while already. I put the money aside and donated to build a school in Africa. So that was not my personal treat, but something I wanted to do. Actually, I told my parents that I want to name the school after them. My mother said that is a complete nonsense idea. So if you have a good name for a school, up for suggestions. That was something really I wanted to do.
Why did you want to build a school in Africa, and where in Africa, and what kind of school?
It's Kenya. It's a kids' school. I'm financing and donating money for a couple of years already. A friend of mine, it's called School for Life. They built already one school, and She approached me last year saying they have a new project, if I have any ideas. And I said, give it a time. I have an idea there. And actually, my grandpa grew up in Africa. And he grew up in Dar es Salaam. The school is now in Kenya, near to Mombasa. And I just started to build the building there. And yes, having kids on my own, and they have everything. We have enough cars. We have, actually, this is something I need to admit, but also a project I had already planned before. We're building a new house, which is also a challenge. So we keep that slow down a little bit. But yeah, it's now a little bit easier, to be honest. And there might be a swimming pool for the kids already from the beginning and not a That's couple cool. of years later.
But it's also fair, and there's no need to excuse, because in the end you took an entrepreneurial risk. Nobody knew if it would happen when you started with your partner. And well, if you're successful, why would you not be able to treat yourself and your family with
Absolutely.
Something?
Absolutely.
Yeah. You should not be, or no one should be ashamed of that, and saying that. It's weird, no? In the United States, they are really proud in saying that, and everybody says cool, and I want to achieve that. And in Germany, it's like you almost have the feeling, which I saw a little bit now, like, ooh. Yeah, should I say this so openly, and maybe people take it in the wrong direction? But I think you should be proud of what you achieved, and you should be able to do something nice for you and your family. Yeah,
and when we talk to our employees, you basically get the same feedback. You get the same feedback. It's like, and especially if you do it like I said, it's not about taking the most money out and run. And as I said, would have had the option basically to do so. It is like putting a little bit behind the firewall, treating yourself, treating others, helping others, and then and as I said, I'm still invested, so I hope that money will also grow, and then I potentially find a nice treat. I don't know yet.
But I hope you take some bigger holiday at some point and have some time to think about something. Yeah.
That is actually the most trickiest part, yeah. And when I talk to people who come to us, I always say, hey, take the time, take a quick break at least for a couple of weeks, because that's something I really missed. Is like did my studies. I worked in industry for the first 2 years, right to consulting, then 12 years Accenture, or Anderson Consulting Accenture, then starting the own company. Yeah. Perhaps over the next years, I find somewhere at least 4 weeks holiday.
Yeah. And I mean, in the end, I think you have the right mindset of like in a couple of years, 5 or 10 years, get out of the company. So you're building up someone and you make yourself redundant. And the more you do that, the more you should be able to go out. And it's a good test for the company to just be away for a couple of weeks, and everything will keep on running usually, even though you think it might not. So that's a good one. And you only live once. So in the end, whenever you have the time, at least when you get out of there, don't jump into the next one, and take maybe a year, half a year, whatever, and enjoy leisureliness.
Slow down a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you will probably never slow down forever, because if you're an entrepreneur by heart, something else will trigger you, and then you keep on jumping again. Pretty sure, yeah. What are your, if you put it into numbers, what are your goals now with this investor on board in the next couple of years? Do you have any milestones that you want to disclose?
And this, as I said, this was very clear, and we have that very clearly worked out. So as I said in the beginning, what we want to do and what the next stepping stone basically is to triple the business to 150 million, around 500 people. These are the
In what time frame?
Next 5 years.
Okay.
And as I said, and I'll come to that later, but we are ahead of our story at the moment. But basically, beside the numbers, and you said it right before, we want to massively expand our footprint from and we are proud to be this trusted advisor and hidden champion, but become a European leader for digital transformations, or for business transformations, I would rather say. We are now looking for strategic targets to growth in that area of digital transformation. Said before, I'm an SAP guy, so this SAP HANA transformation is one of the areas we're looking for. Enterprise architecture, data, but also leverage more the cross-selling in our in other portfolio companies. So CAFIS also helps to open the doors there. And then if the right things come across, also geographically expand. Basically, to follow our clients, they all have a global footprint. Focus is Europe, but you never know. Yeah? And as I said, at the end, we hope to then become one of the leaders for digital transformation with 500 plus people, but keeping the culture. And I think this is the true important thing, is that what made us successful will remain, is like having the best people, having an experienced team, not just hiring stuff of junior guys, and really with being expert for the digital transformation, for doing this large scale transformation you can trust.
Yeah. And one thing that you mentioned, and I honestly, I mean, you learn about it in business school, and I still remember when I was in Madrid doing the MBA, and you have this HR professor, and I must admit, I fell asleep more than once. But once you're running your business, you notice that this is the core function, basically. And culture is not just a buzzword, but it's to sum up what people do when you don't have processes and no one looks. And so what you just said is something that I even learned now. And I understand when you say you want to keep the culture, because this is what you made successful, what made you successful. And if you can keep it as is, yeah, with this entrepreneurial mindset and what other pillars you have in place, then growth is, I wouldn't say almost automatic, but you're in the right area of business. I mean, the whole market is growing. And if you don't do big mistakes, yeah.
But you're spot on there. And then this is always what I say is our travel policy is, I think it's not even a page, because people are they're mindful people there, and they know what to do. They know that at this time it needs to be ecological to a certain extent, that it doesn't need to be the travel by plane, and it doesn't need to be the first class ticket. You can travel. Like by train or things like that. So, and on the other side, you said it yourself, the market, and this is what has been shown, you know, the last 20 years, like IT digital transformation was always there. I just said the Zapana story. These are the programs you don't stop, even if times get a little bit tougher and the budgets get tighter. These are the things you get that get running. And we are right in the middle of this market. So, even if overall the market shrinks, there's still enough area to grow. And if you have the right talent, and therefore it's, again, very important to attract the right people and also keep the right people there. You know, as I said, we have a very low attrition rate, and this is something I'm really proud of.
You know. How low is it, the attrition rate?
And that was actually one of the KPIs I was looking at, is how many people leave the company while this process, and there was almost none. I think quite a lot of people wow. now stay. I need Katinka on my side to give you the right numbers, but this year it's like only 2 or 3 people.
Out of 200, I mean, that is 200. Like... Honestly, I never heard it from a consulting company, and that is super low. Well done. Yeah, well done.
Yeah.
So now we are already at the end of our conversation, Ferdinand, and I have 5 rapid-fire questions lined up for you. Are you ready?
Sure.
First question, what do you do to keep body and mind fit and sharp?
Very simple, sports and books. Not enough these days, I need to admit. But as I said, I have a family. I have 2 young daughters. They keep me alive and in shape.
How old are they?
2 and 7. And I have a partner who keep me down to earth. That's what I do. And if then we find some time to do in the summers more sports, in the winter skiing, that's what I do.
What kind of sports do you do?
Actually, in the winter skiing, I do run recently, not enough, because that's basically simple. If you have 2 children, it's like the only thing you can do beside. And In winter, we do skiing. In summer, I did sailing. That's not the right sports for kids. So, yeah, being somewhere around the water.
Very nice. Next one. Do you have a favorite business book? And if so, which one is it?
My all-time favorite, and this is really a book I know I read for the last 20 years, I almost said, is not quite sure if you know, from Spencer Johnson, Who Moved My Cheese?
Yeah, I
found that story. It's very simple. This is something I can even tell my kids, like, prepare yourself. There will be change. And this is something I have that quite often next to my bed and remind me there will be change and you need to prepare for it. And then I really liked reading like true stories, like the biography of Steve Jobs recently. And there's even a series, I think, on Netflix on Phil Knight, the founder of Nike. These are the things I really like.
Really and cool books, yeah.
At the moment, a quite interesting story about, I'm not sure if you know, the Sackler family. There was also a series in a movie about this is how they transitioned the pharma, not in a good way. I need to see, the pharma industry and the Oxy drug dynasty. Quite interesting. So these are the books I really like to read. It's like true stories that keeps me more interested and awake rather than reading a good historical roman or something like that.
Yeah. We put them in the show notes. Yeah. Do you also sometimes listen to podcasts?
What I listen regularly, Handelsblatt, but actually I'm still there because we sit in front of computers all the day and listen to things. I'm really still a books guy and a newspaper guy. So I read the Handelsblatt, Kapital and Wirtschaftswoche. I read quite regular. What I really use quite often is Blinkist. Actually then to select which books I want to read. So I have my list and with artificial intelligence, they suggest you new things. And then I read through or I hear the Blinkist mostly while I'm driving. And then I click the button on Amazon and order the book.
Yeah. Very good. Who should be our next podcast guest for the Leaders in Consulting show and why?
Good question. A couple of ideas. So first of all, I actually would find it quite funny to hear the story from the other side. So talk to our investment bank or even Capris, our investor. That would be interesting for you, for myself, really, to hear from them. I'm quite interesting now to get feedback on when the podcast is out. Secondly, and when we talk about leaders consulting, and if you wish, I can talk to Frank Greensberger. He's a real leader in consulting. He was leading Accenture for the last almost decade, I think, or even longer. And he knows the industry quite in and out, and talking to him is very interesting. So he would be a good suggestion.
Yeah, it would be great if you could ask him if he would be interested. Yeah. And now you can directly address our audience. Is there anything we can help you with, Ferdinand?
And we mentioned it before. We are looking for, and I on purpose say corporations in whatever form ever. Yeah. And we are clear heading to becoming one of the leaders for business digital transformations and looking for the right talent, looking for the right companies. As I said, in different areas of expertise, like cloud, like SAP HANA, but also more business data analytics, these areas, but also geographically. So if there's anything out there, and even if it's this is the guy you should talk to because he knows a lot, he can connect, reach out to me. That is really, I'm looking forward. But honestly, and that's what I did in the process, but what I do my whole career is networking and connect to people. So I'm always eager to share a coffee and have a good talk, even if there's not a direct next steps. It's like to learn from others. This is what I'm eager to. So if there's anyone interesting, reach me on LinkedIn or on our webpage, there's my profile, and click on that and get in contact.
Yeah, that would be my last question. What is the best way to get in touch with you?
Email, to be honest. Yeah, phone.
What's your email address?
It's ferdinand.weiss@adexpartners.com.
Mm-hmm. So ferdinand.weiss, W-E-I-S-S.
Yeah. At adexpartners.com, but Google Adex Partners and you find it on the web, at least the contact there. Or simply, it's the easiest thing is LinkedIn. And this is, I need to admit, is really also becoming a platform for ourselves and to get in contact with people. And it's easy. And then you can take it from there to do what we just did, having a good discussion and sharing some thoughts and bouncing ideas.
So, you heard Ferdinand, growing growth story, looking for partners that can help you and basically them grow faster. Reach out to Ferdinand. It doesn't harm to have a chat. And yeah, Ferdinand, thanks a lot for all these insights. Kudos for what you've achieved up to now and all the best for the next couple of years.
Thank you. Thank you, Sami. It was really a pleasure and hope to hear from you and hopefully from your listeners a lot. Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's it for now. Thanks for listening. Subscribe to our monthly newsletter at leadersinconsulting.com to get key takeaways from this podcast delivered straight to your inbox. And to learn more about how you can join our community of consultancy leaders from around the world. You'd really make my day if you left us a review and subscribe to the podcast on Apple or Spotify. And who knows, maybe we can meet each other at the next Leaders in Consulting monthly meetup. Until then, have a great rest of your week. Your host, Sam.